Welcome to Conversations with Anna Elizabeth, the podcast inspired by my book. I'm a registered dietitian, Now What?, where I have the absolute joy to sit back, relax, and have a conversation about nutrition with a variety of people who share their personal story of passion and purpose, especially registered dietitians. Today's conversation is with Tina Miguio, a registered dietitian who started out with a career path to physical therapy, taking a nutrition class, kind of like me, and then unintentionally, but turning intentionally, made nutrition her future. Along her journey, she has met some amazing mentors and cheerleaders who have encouraged her path of diabetes coaching, childbirth education, and working as a retail dietitian. Please enjoy my conversation with Tina. With me today on the podcast. I'm excited to finally catch up with you after we met this year. Yeah. I can't believe that was in January.
I know.
So long ago. It feels like a lifetime ago, but
it sure does.
That's okay. You know, time flies just when you're having fun and not having fun, apparently. It happens.
Yes.
Well, I would love to get to know you a little bit more, just kind of your past and your present and your future. So maybe take me back to when you got interested in health and nutrition and maybe being a dietitian.
Sure. So, I mean, I think my story starts like as a little girl, knowing early on that I wanted to be in a health and wellness field. And like many little children, it was like a pediatrician or a nurse or a doctor, some of sorts. I got to high school and I wanted to be a physical therapist. That's what I want to do. Got into Florida State University, signed up for their, I guess it was like a pre-PT program. I'm a New York girl. I went to Tallahassee, Florida, and it just was not my vibe. You know, the city to northern Florida and just not knowing anything outside of my big city. I made friends, but, you know, did my first year there and knew that I wanted to leave. So I started the process to transfer out of Florida State to I applied to the University of Miami in Coral Gables because that was one of my other choices when I was applying to college, and NYU. And I actually got into both when I was transferring out of FSU, but feeling homesick as I was, I decided to go to NYU. That last semester at Florida State, so my second semester of my first year, I had taken a nutrition class and was really enjoying it and loving it. And it was one of the prerequisites for PT. And so when I was applying to schools outside of FSU, many of them had phased away their undergraduate PT programs. So it left me with applying to nutrition programs. And because I had really enjoyed the class and thought, you know, I could see a career there, I applied to the nutrition program at NYU and opted to go to NYU because I missed my family. Long story short, by the end of the second year of college, when I had already transferred back to New York, my whole family moved to Florida.
Oh my, are you serious?
I am totally serious. So,
did you know that was happening or no?
I know that my mom wanted to leave New York, but like it was one of those things where I was like, she's not leaving. And then like she left, my aunt left, my cousin left. So it was basically like me and my male cousin that is about my same age. And we ended up living in an apartment in Queens together.
Oh my goodness.
For college. Yeah. So that's kind of how I landed in nutrition. It was like wanting to be in a helping profession, thinking it would be like a physical therapist, taking a nutrition course and really thinking, yeah, this is something that I want to do. And my backstory around nutrition was I, as a young adolescent girl, was classified and considered overweight. I will tell you though, I had a most amazing self-esteem and loved wearing polka dots. But I could tell as I was getting older and entering adolescence that being overweight was not, I don't want to say not okay, but it was something that I needed to fix. And I didn't think I needed to fix it, but as I entered like 11 and 12, I started to become very conscious of my body in a negative way, in a way that I hadn't experienced before. And that was a whole nother kind of journey around, you know, just your changing body in pre-adolescence and adolescence, and this idea of what my body should look like. Which I struggled with for a while in my teens and in my early 20s, and finally realized, you know, and understood kind of where that came from. But it's so interesting how in my family, I didn't get this negative sense of my body. It was as I was around my peers and just kind of being more aware of mainstream media and what beauty standards were that I guess I started to feel less about my body. And it's so interesting because we don't have these conversations, at least in the 90s, we weren't really having these conversations and
no
around body, self-image, self-esteem, and kind of what that is and what that looks like. And, you know, I didn't even know what it was. I was just going through it and not understanding it and didn't know who to talk to about it. But when I got to college and kind of learned about health and wellness from this different lens, it was really helpful and it was really eye-opening to not just think about it from I can manipulate or control what I eat to look a certain way, but this has to do with my overall health and my overall sense of well-being, which is not something that I had thought about prior to that. So a roundabout answer.
No, that's so interesting there. I will agree with you. The 90s, I mean, I grew up in the 90s too. So it's kind of like, it's amazing how far we've come with those conversations. Yeah. And probably for you, since you were so like PT focused and then you kind of veered into dietetics, maybe it was purposeful for your experience for growing up to reconnect with that nutrition side and take on this career.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think, you know, also the conversations kind of in the early 2000s when I was in college to what the conversations are now around nutrition, much of it is the same, but so much of it has changed around looking at it beyond someone's weight and wellness, right? And mm-hmm. having conversations beyond, you know, weight status as an equivalent of health status, which we know is not.
Yes. Nothing. Yes. There's such a bigger picture. It's amazing. Like even as a dietitian, like earlier in my career, I didn't think about the bigger picture. And now it's just so apparent and it's just part of my everyday that it's mm-hmm. like, yeah, there's so much more to the equation than just eat this and lose weight.
Yeah. 100%. And now that I'm a mother, and a mother of young boys, how we look at nutrition and how we kind of talk about it certainly is different, but there are undertones that are the same around, you know, children growing up and their weight status being kind of this concern related to their health without any other consideration to the other things happening in their life. Mm-hmm. Just for context, I'm 5'3", my husband's 6'2", I'm Latina, he's Irish, so some wild genes there.
Yeah.
And this little lady had really big kids, and my oldest son is still a really big kid. He's just big, mm-hmm. and, you know, so he's never been on those charts, and I feel like I've had to guard and gatekeep conversations around his weight as, you know, a connection to his health in a very obviously motherly way, but, you know, just kind of not kind of make that the central conversation around his milestones and his growth, especially because he's an athlete as well.
Oh gosh. Yeah. And I think that as parents, you do, especially like, you know, because you're a medical professional as well, but that whole weight stigma with kiddos and that growth chart and all those things are, I feel like it's just as outdated kind of as like the BMI chart, you know, like it's kind of like, again, let's not focus on one thing. Let's focus on you know, is the kid active? Is he sleeping good? Is he eating fruits and vegetables and having some protein and enjoying life? And is he happy? And all those things are so important.
100%. 100%. So it's interesting how this career continuously, every day, in some way, shape, or fashion, kind of segues into kind of regular daily life. For better or worse, sometimes you're just like, I don't talk about this right now. I'm not a nutritionist right now.
I don't want to be a dietitian right now. Can I just be a human for a second? So speaking of career, so as you wrapped up school, did you do your internship at NYU as well? Do they have an internship?
I think so. It's been so long. I'm going on almost 20 years outside of undergrad. I don't know where this time went. Time is a thief.
Same, girl. Same.
I didn't do it at NYU. I did it at through Hunter College. So I opted to do a joint DI MPH program.
Oh, nice.
And it's so funny because when I was applying to DI programs, I just wanted to get the DI done, right? And so dietetic internship. And so here comes this acceptance to Hunter and they're like, oh, we have like this dual, you can get some credits toward your MPH. I'm here like 21, 22. I'm like, I don't know if I want to go back to school right now, but it was the best decision I made, doing that joint dietetic internship MPH program. Along the way, I took a little break after the DI, to complete my MPH, which I'm also happy I did, but I can say both having my master's in public health and having my RD have been so important to my journey. And also just this real love and affair with the, you know, public health and wellness for almost 20 years. So I'm really glad that that kind of has been my trajectory. And I've had some really great experiences, really amazing mentors, which I know is not everyone's experience, but I have had a lot of great connections along the way.
It's kind of funny how it seems that you didn't intentionally choose this path, but you kind of intentionally fell into some of these things, right? Like the MPH too, like it wasn't on your radar, but it's turned out to be something that has been very consistent and has flourished your career.
100%. And it totally is exactly what you said. It's like, this is not the journey that I was envisioning. But, you know, when you're in high school and you're learning about career pathways or you're early in college, a lot of the times, and it's maybe changed over the last two decades, it often seems like you have to do these prerequisites and you have to be pre something before you are able to complete a program. You have to give like your life soul to volunteering and interning to just figure out your way. And so, yeah, I think happening upon this nutrition class and learning about an MPH, I don't know how else I would have learned about these career pathways had I not learned about them the way I did when I did. And yeah, meeting a lot of people along the way that had careers that were intriguing to me, I guess, was also part of it.
Interesting. So those are maybe some mentors too for you that you kind of worked with. Yeah. Did you find those like in your first jobs, in your first careers? Were they professors, teachers? Kind of where did you find those people?
So the wonderful thing when I opted to go to NYU to their nutrition program, it was a really small program compared to kind of being at FSU and this kind of you're just doing your prerequisites. I felt like I was in a nice small knit group. And I had some really good advisors. And I think what really kicked it off was I think it was my third year of college. I applied and started doing an internship, a field work. It was field work with a woman named Fern Estro at a senior organization. And we were doing assessments in English and Spanish. And one of my kind of task was to do a bulletin board, community bulletin board. And Fern is a very spunky, like, dynamic woman and was really great. And I kind of presented my first bulletin board, and she gave me some really, like, just direct critique of my work. And basically said there was a lot of room for improvement and that, you know, I needed to be more creative and really kind of think outside of the box. And if I'm talking about this almost 20 years later, it means that this lady left a huge impact on me. Mm-hmm. From that experience on, when I did field work, when I did an internship, when I met someone, when I networked, I was showcasing something. I really tried to kind of pull from that creative sense of whatever the message was or whatever I was trying to showcase as it related to nutrition or as it related to whatever the topic at hand was. So fast forward, going into my internship, my very last rotation was with Cornell Cooperative Extension. They also know Fern. And the other thing that you learn about this field is that everyone knows everyone.
They do.
There's like 6 degrees of separation. And so they're a program that basically trains lay community educators to do nutrition education in schools and health fairs, et cetera. And I remember being so frustrated in this internship because it was just like, why am I doing this? Like, this is like, this seems like grunt work. And it really, again, are skills that I still use to this day. So one of the things that they did is, I don't know if it was weekly, every 2 weeks, once a month, I can't remember the frequency. We would be in this big conference room and we would be like testing things out. We like a big, like creative session with post-it pads, markers, setting up toolkits and basically running through the toolkit. I remember just, and me and my colleagues, who I'm still friends with, we were the ones that had to set up the room. Yep, it was weekly, every week. And it was hard because we had to set up the conference room. We had to set up the food demo stations. And I was just like, what am I learning here? This is like the naive, you know, 21-year-old. And I will say that organization, that strategy, that like thinking about implementation sticks with me to this day. Like if I have an idea, I'm already jumping to implementation. Like, what is it that I'm teaching? What is it that I want the person, the group to take away? What is it that I want my audience to be wowed by? And so, you know, that first experience around creativity and like, what is my message with Fern, kind of, you know, I had to hone in on it so much more that last rotation in my internship. And then when I started working and doing different groups, those were the skills that I kind of tapped into to engage people, because I never knew who I was trying to engage. Was it a 5-year-old? Was it a 55-year-old? You know, am I doing this in English? Am I doing this in Spanish? Can they read? Those skills were so important to the message.
That's so interesting how those little nuggets of what we thought were grunt work in our internships come back and become part of our toolkit as professionals.
1,000%. I remember just like not understanding how this all mattered. And it matters because you are excited about your message or you're excited to be on your platform doesn't mean that your audience understands it, is interested, and is going to ride along with you. You have to create that interest.
Oh, I love that. You do. That's so true. And you have to put some research into it, right? You got to do some setup.
100%. Nowadays, though, some people are just, you know, they have a platform and they forget about that research component and that setup. But it is important to the message.
So what was kind of first jobs for you? Like maybe kind of take me through, you know, your career so far.
So my very first job was 2 months shy of sitting for my RD exam. So it was an RD role contingent upon passing the exam. And I can't believe how naive I was around this whole thing. Because now that I've been a preceptor many times over the past 2 decades, one, I can't even fathom how competitive things have gotten. And also just like, you know, when you're in the machine, you kind of are just doing the thing. You don't think about how hard things are sometimes. I guess mm-hmm. I was just doing it, right? And so now kind of being on the outside, mentoring periodically, precepting periodically, the game is so much harder, I feel. Anyway, that's another conversation. But my first job right before my RD exam was at a hospital. I fought against going inpatient. Everyone's like, you have to do inpatient. Mm-hmm. I wanted to do what I was calling community clinical. I wanted to be in the community doing clinical work. And so I got my first job at an ambulatory care center or network of ambulatory care centers for a large hospital here in New York. And I think they were sending me to like five clinics to be a dietitian. I did a high-risk gestational diabetes clinic in the hospital once a week. And then I did like two or three satellite clinics in the community. And outside of the GGM clinic, it basically was anyone and everyone, from someone who was 75 with diabetes to a child that had a BMI of, you know, 25 or what have you. Mm-hmm. And basically it was volume. See as many people as you could. Oh. That day. And along the way, I had to fight for adequate time to see my patients, to do the work. But, you know, you often in your first roles say yes to a lot more and then you learn how to say no.
Yes,
you do. I was in the yes stages of my career at that point. And that woman knew, the woman who hired me for the hospital knew the woman or the team of women that I was interning with at Cornell. So they recommended me for this job. And then the Evangelina, when another opportunity came up about a year and a half later, recommended me to my now mentor, who's been my mentor for 15 years. So again,
everyone
knows everyone.
That's amazing.
and Lorena has been my unicorn.
Oh, sure. I love the title. She's like your one woman show, huh?
Yeah, she was the woman that told me you need to get your CDCES certification. I was like, but why? Because you do. You know, you speak Spanish, you work in this community, you know, get it. So I got it. And she along the way has been such a great guide. I think the other element here that I haven't mentioned is the cultural context for me. So being a Latina woman in this profession, I think we're at what, around 6% Latinos are registered dietitians. It might be a little higher, might be a little lower. That was one of the stats I heard recently. Mm-hmm. So still not many. Mm-hmm. Being bilingual, you know, is something that's so important in my neck of the woods, being in this big city. You know, having the privilege of being able to speak Spanish. And I say a privilege because I was exposed to a bilingual household from childhood, from birth, but I, you know, didn't want to speak Spanish when I was spoken to in Spanish as a child.
Like, no.
And then when I was interviewing for my first jobs in the Bronx, in Washington Heights, these are different areas in New York City, where there is a large Spanish-speaking population, they would be like, do you speak Spanish? And I'm like, yes. I'm like, oh, shoot.
I'm going to have to use this now.
But that was humbling because when I started working, the way I level set with my patients and my clients was I had something to teach you around health and wellness, and they felt pride in helping me better speak better Spanish.
Oh.
And so we were equal. I wasn't better than them and they weren't better than me. We had something to give each other. And I think that that's how I was so successful in doing the things I did in the community, which I can talk more about, but
so lovely though, that, you know, that was reciprocated with you helped me and I'm going to help you.
Yeah, especially I was like, 22? And most of my patients in my outpatient diabetes group that I was running twice a week were like 65, 70.
Oh.
So
Like, you were like their grandkid. You were like their grandchild. Yeah.
What's this lady, little lady going to teach us? But we had so much fun. So much fun. And we, my task when I got hired into this role was to help the hospital, this outpatient hospital program, get diabetes recognition.
Oh. Which I did. And good for you. That's tough.
This was, what, 17 years ago. Didn't know what I was doing.
No.
Did the research, learned about the American Diabetes Association requirements, learned about the, I always confuse their acronym now because they changed their name a few years ago, but the Academy of Diabetes Care and Education Specialists, and, you know, honed in on this world, this world, which kind of opened up another world of understanding public health from a different lens, of social determinants and, you know, food insecurity, things that I didn't learn in school.
And you've been in this field, like you're continuing in this field currently, right?
Yes.
So you're really focused in outpatient diabetes education.
So up until about a year and a half ago, yes.
Okay.
And so then when I met you in January, I had said that I was kind of a newly minted retail dietitian.
That's right. I forgot about that. So yes. Yeah. So please talk about that too. Are you still doing both? And how did you transition into that space?
I am a Jane of many trades.
I'm gathering that.
of many trades. So what I decided about, I don't know, close to 10 years ago was that, you know, around the point that I guess a lot of people start kind of reaching burnout and maybe transitioning to do other things. For a long time, I thought, do I want to do something else? Do I want to go back to school? And I thought maybe. And then I had my children and I was like, no, I don't want to go back to school. What is this craft that I'm doing? And so after working in two huge hospital systems as my first and my second job, I landed a job at a federally qualified health center, a network of federally qualified health centers. And there is really where I honed in my skills, not only as an RD, as a CDE, later on a lactation consultant, as a program director, et cetera. And along the way, I decided that, you know, the things that I'm most passionate about are working in my communities of need and focus and diabetes. And so I honed in on the craft, you know, got the CDCES in, I don't know, 2009, then was a director for a while and decided after having my kids, you know, I wanted more balance. And so I started doing trainings, working with organizations, either as a consultant. Later on, I worked for one full time to train community health educators on chronic disease conditions and kind of lifestyle. So teaching lay health educators around diabetes self-management, around blood pressure management, asthma management, designing programs. So to this day, I'm still a consultant outside of work for a few different organizations and somehow also became a childbirth educator, but that's another conversation for another day. as part of my own kind of private business endeavors.
Okay. And you do that too?
Yes, I do. I'm still a childbirth educator. And actually do some teaching for a really great organization and sometimes also do it independently with the goal of trying to just help individuals who otherwise wouldn't have access to some of this information in a cost-effective way. So where opportunities exist to do that, I love doing that. So COVID happened, right? And, you know, everyone pivoted. So I was working for an organization that was doing trainings and they were really successful working with hospitals and working to do all these trainings for people living with a variety of chronic conditions. And then I got laid off, which I didn't understand because me, Tina, got laid off. Like how in the world?
Yeah.
And, you know, it was really eye-opening and also unsettling, because I was just like, what do I do next? You know, and I thought I wanted to go and work for like venture capital groups that are doing really exciting, you know, work in the spaces of health and diabetes and gestational diabetes. And then I had conversations with them and I didn't like those conversations. And then I happened upon the job description for this retail dietitian job, which wasn't just like being in store, but was an opportunity to bring this work that I've been doing for, you know, almost 2 decades into the community, establish community partnerships, bring health and wellness activities to different communities, collaborate with all these different amazing organizations. And so that's what I do. I have, my role is to be supportive to in-store kind of health and wellness, you know, efforts, but also to really build relationships and partnerships in the communities that I service. So I'm dedicated primarily to the Bronx. But as the only dietitian in my region in New York, I also go out to other similar communities throughout the boroughs. And I'm really enjoying the role because I feel it's the role that combines all of these things, being a dietitian, learning about marketing and merchandising, as well as, you know, bringing the message of the importance of nutrition to help prevent, manage, and control chronic conditions.
It's kind of like the mesh of all the perfect things that you enjoy doing.
Yes, 100%. I have a really great team that I work with, that I collaborate with. And yeah, it's not something that I probably would have like looked at and said, hey, I think I want to do that. It's just the role, the way the role was written, and then the conversations that I had were like, oh my goodness, this is something that I think I'd be really good at. And it's been a good mix. I still do my other passion projects. So consult to teach diabetes self-management education online, design programs around, you know, gestational diabetes management, and do some periodic childbirth education in person in the city.
I don't know how you do all these things, but you are amazing. Like, that's, I love your passion though. It's like, but it doesn't seem like your passion, just seems like it's just ingrained in you. Like, this is just who you are, and it just all seems to fit really well.
Well, thank you. I mean, for someone to say that after a conversation really is gratifying, because I feel like sometimes I was like, what are you doing, Tina? Like, what is this? And, you know, that eye-opening moment, probably around the time I had my first son, it was like, if I'm going to take time away from my children, it needs to be something that's meaningful. And the conversation now is, how do I do the work that I love to do without compromising my time as a mother? And so I don't feel like I'm, you know, compromising my time as a mother with the work that I do. Oh, and it actually has led to my children learning about health and wellness in a very, I think, fun and kid-centric way. Like, I was teaching childbirth at home during COVID, and my then 5-year-old learned about childbirth and the pelvis and loved hearing birth stories. And, you know, these are things that he probably wouldn't have learned had I just been doing it outside of the home. And I wouldn't have thought to teach him about it maybe as soon as that conversation started happening. You know, I also am able to then learn how to have these conversations around health with my children, which sometimes we think they're not the audience. Mm-hmm. These conversations should happen when they're young. And not from a, if you don't do this, then this happens. But, you know, the message that I give when I teach a cooking class or a nutrition workshop is that this journey can be fun, it can be flavorful, and it can be fast. Things that I think as adults, we're like, okay, I don't want to do something that I don't enjoy. I don't want to do something that doesn't taste good. Yes. And I don't have time for this. So if it's going to take up too much time, as great as your message is, I don't have time.
I'm out. They're out. Yeah, they're done. They're checking out. And you're like, and like for you, I feel like that you genuinely, like you apply that to your life. So it's really easy to help people and teach people because you do it yourself.
Exactly. I'm a living testament to the
fast.
Fast.
Yes. Which that just shows how genuinely, you know, like you're just living, you're living what you practice. And that's, that resonates, I think, with humans just in general, because you're relatable and they can come, you're at the same playing field. You're at the same level. So that's how people learn the best, I think.
100%. I have to agree.
Gosh, lady, I'm impressed. Like, I knew you did lots of stuff, but I didn't know you did all the things. And I love that you're also doing these things with your kiddos too. I mean, like, that's so important. Like, no person is too young to learn about different things. So I think that's really great.
Yeah. And now that they sometimes see me at the local supermarket, it's also like trippy. Oh.
I bet it is. They're probably like, whoa.
But yeah, it's, I don't think I would still be an RD had I not found a way to make it part of who I am versus me changing who I am to fit this profession.
That's the best message that could come out of this podcast, I think. Yeah. Because I think there's too many dietitians that are the opposite. So I love that you shared that. Well done. Well done, my dear. Anything big planned for future? Are you kind of like really just finding the great balance with your life and your professional, your personal life? Are you content? How are you feeling about things?
I think there's always like big ideas. Someone encouraged me to read a book, and I can't remember the name of it right now, but it's from the author who wrote Eat, Pray, Love.
Oh, I don't know who that is, but
Gilbert, I think.
Gilbert. Yes.
And it's about manifesting those ideas that you have and not letting them kind of die because, you know, life. Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of a phase where I'm at right now. It's just like baseball and, you know, grandparents getting older and, you know, life. Someone said yesterday on Instagram that I follow, life is lifing, right? And so before you know it, you are 3 years later and that amazing idea that you had, you never kind of kicked it off. And so I'm navigating some ideas around, you know, the programs that I've created and the audience. I think there's a big gap, especially in our maternal health care in this country, especially when it has to do with, you know, adequate care, especially among women of color, people of color, birthing people of color, and things like the message, you know, gestational diabetes is something that I'm really passionate about because when I was doing it in practice in person, just the messaging and the takeaways that these individuals were getting around how they needed to control their blood sugars and not allowing themselves to enjoy their pregnancies and restricting and all these icky things came up. And so I feel like there's a message there that I want to help build, create, get out there, but we'll see. We'll see. No promises right now.
That's okay. But I don't doubt that you're going to keep lifing during life. So wherever that leads you, I'm sure you're going to crush it. So
try to find the name of that book for you because I started reading it and I haven't, but it's about like big ideas, creative ideas. I'll message you because
Yeah, because I think we're kind of in that same age range and it's kind of like I get where you're coming from as far as, you know, you've been doing this for a while, but again, you still like, you know, you have a family and you have all these other things that are your focus too. And you're like, okay, so where can I fit in one of my big ideas and make it flourish?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And also, I'm also okay, like with pauses, you know,
Yes.
You don't get this time back with your little people. And before I know it, my little people are going to be, you know, teenagers, and they're not going to be that interested in me. And so while they still think I'm awesome and amazing and their favorite person, I kind of want to relish in that because I know
absolutely
those days are probably short lived.
And then they'll probably move to Florida.
quite true. But anyway, yeah. So thank you so much for listening to my little journey today.
Oh, I love it. It's so fun because then it just makes me love all these humans even more, just knowing more about those personal depths and cracks and crannies of each person. It's kind of fun. Okay, are you ready for some hard questions?
Sure.
Okay. Why don't you share with me some of your favorite foods?
My favorite foods. I think, Nutella. And here's why. One, it's amazing, this little jar of goodness. And in college, I actually had to pick a food and do like from farm to table. And so learned all about it, did a whole paper on it, and still love it. So makes me happy, and I make a really mean Nutella hot chocolate when it's cold.
Ooh. Have you ever made it from scratch? Have you ever done like the hazelnuts and like done it from scratch?
No, I should try, but I have not.
I mean, it's just not like planning your time out, but I didn't even like, I seriously, how dumb I am. I'm like, oh, someone did some recipe for it. And I'm like, oh, Nutella, you can make it from scratch. Why? You just buy it in the store. It's perfection.
My kids would probably really enjoy that. And me, not so much with the mess, but now that you put it into my head, it could be something we do when we're stuck at home. But like food, I would probably have to say, something called arroz con gandules. So it's rice with pigeon peas. It's a Puerto Rican, like, typical rice dish. Mm. You know, my cultural foods, like the arroz con gandules, pasteles, which is like this mixture of a bunch of root vegetables kind of made into this paste, kind of. And then you stuff it with meat or chicken, and then you wrap it in a banana leaf and boil it. You usually have it for the holidays. I actually made it for the first time with my mom last Christmas, and we were so awful. They actually tasted pretty good, but like we were not like in sync with each other, and we also did it like at 3 o'clock in the morning. We were like just a hot mess.
Oh my gosh.
So much. And you know, from finding all the ingredients in the different supermarkets to actually making it, and just, you know, these foods often bring back so many memories of my childhood, my grandparents, you know, going to Puerto Rico, our holidays together. So those have to be two of my favorite kinds of foods.
I love that. You should send me, I would love the rice, did you say, and peas?
Yes, rice and pigeon peas. It's called arroz con gandules.
Oh, please share that recipe with me. I would love to try that. I don't know if I'll attempt the root vegetable.
Oh, that is
that seems a little crazy.
A labor of love, for sure.
What about beverages that you enjoy?
Beverages that I enjoy. I'm definitely like a seltzer junkie here.
Do you try them all? Do you like buy the random ones and try them?
Yeah, now I'm really into Liquid Death and my.
Oh, you are? I've seen that.
For a while, I was like, is this beer? Like,
yeah.
Like, it's seltzer with like vitamins in it. And I like how it has like a little, like very little sugar, but like you taste like the tea. I don't know. I felt like it was like a nice vacation from seltzer.
Okay. I just see it all the time and I'm like, really?
I know.
It gets you.
And then like, the boys really? Are like, mom, are you going to die from drinking this? Ow. But yeah, and this week at one of my classes, we made a raspberry mojito mocktail with raspberry lime seltzer that was really good. So
yum.
I don't get tired of the seltzers. And then, of course, you know, I'm the typical mom, iced coffee on deck.
On deck, ready to go.
All the time.
It's a treat. I love iced coffee. It's like one of my favorite things. and seltzer. You and I'd be twinsies. We'd definitely, that's my day. What about scents or smells that you enjoy?
Scents or smells? I'm a rose kind of.
Are you?
Scent person, a rose candle, a rose perfume. I just got a mini Nest, the brand Nest.
Oh, yeah.
Rose scented candle. I think that is probably
your fave.
My fave. Chloe has a really gorgeous rose scented perfume that I've always loved. Yeah.
Interesting.
Floral scents are me.
Florals are you. I like that. What about who would be someone, whether they're alive or they've passed on, that you would love to sit down and have an iced coffee with, a seltzer or a meal? Who would you like to do that with?
Probably my grandfather, who, you know, obviously I've had many conversations when he was alive, but, you know, I feel like we didn't have so many conversations that I feel now as an adult that I wish I would have had.
I think that's, it's like you, the grandparents that you knew as a kid, I always think I'd rather know them a little bit more now as an adult, because I think it would be such a different dynamic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I agree with that. I'm the same way. I'd love to be an adult, have an adult conversation with my grandparents. And what brings you joy in life?
What brings me joy? I think, and you know, this is probably cliche, but I'm okay with it. You know, my kids, you know, learning how to parent these people that came from me, and seeing who they become, and nurturing their interests and answering their questions and helping them navigate and problem solve. Having repeated third grade with my oldest son this past year, you know, I'm definitely not smarter than a third grader. So that goes into fourth grade. No, I'm not going to be smarter than a fourth grader. But they're just fun people. I love their curiosity. I think being curious is one of the most important traits that we can have as humans. And, you know, children are so curious. And that curiosity is eye-opening.
Yeah, I mean, you can't go wrong with living life through your kiddos' eyes. I think that's really a great experience. And they're lucky to have you as their mama, for sure.
Thank you.
Well, lovely to chat with you today. Thanks for sharing your journey. And I continue to follow your journey and see what exciting things happen for you.
Thank you, Anne. This was a lot of fun.
I think one thing that resonated with Tina and I in our whole conversation is believing in connection. And believing in that connection during her journey as becoming a dietitian and just her career path, school, all the things, and how those connections have led her to really truly finding her passion in her career, and then that balance with her home life too. I think it's more about the people than the actual education that we get, and the education is just a conduit to meet those connections. So Tina really spoke to that in our conversation. It just really resonated with me. And, you know, just connecting with Tina as well has been interesting, because we do have a lot of similarities as far as our own paths. But then also getting to meet her in person is actually very cool too. So I had that opportunity as well last year. If you connected with Tina in our conversation, you can go find her on Instagram at @bloomingmomwellness. And then you can also find her on her website at Blooming Mom. And that is linked in the show notes. So make sure to go connect with her and check her out. Remember to be great always, find the joy in each day, and start a conversation that truly matters.